Kim and see if he's got the recorder working. Anyway, it's 9 o'clock. I'll call the meeting to order. And first order of business, well, we'll go ahead with the review and approval of the minutes from December 4th. Anyone taking the time to read them? Need a motion for approval or corrections if there are any.
I was absent, Lisa. I'll let you at least
get okay.
Motion.
Okay. Did I move to accept the minutes as written?
Okay.
Mike, second it.
You can second it. Casey, you have a...
Yeah, I was just going to ask if the... we started for this meeting the process of... that we hope to be able to make a routine now of a week before the meeting to email out as much of that information as we could, everything for the minutes to what we're going to be talking about. Did that work pretty well for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good for me. I was.
Great if you can do that. Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same. Okay. Now we have Randy Lampa all the way down from Tum Tum Mountain, our new board member. Maybe one of...
All I was going to say is my part of it, and then I'll put you on the spot, was just thanks for being willing. I know we talked on the phone a couple of times, and you came highly recommended. So we appreciate you being able to serve with us for a couple of years, and hopefully after that, be willing to go on further. So, yeah, if you want to introduce yourself and why you're here.
Well, I guess my friend Lee sort of volunteered me.
Was a friend, my ex-friend.
It's interesting. I got a farm out there, and I have had the weed control board come out and visit it a couple times for the tansy and Canadian thistle, and then I had something looks like a wild carrot. I don't know what they called it, but I ended up getting some cinnabar moths on one time to plant out there and stuff. So I've been with the weed control board, or working with them, not on the board. So it's interesting because I've already learned stuff just from the minutes you sent out.
Good.
Because some of that midsummer stuff, I was spraying, and then all of a sudden it says, well, it doesn't help.
Yeah, spending money. Wow. All right. Well, welcome. Thank you. Thank you again for serving. Thanks, Casey and Lee. I guess first order of business, adoption of the 2017 weed list.
Yeah, so if you take a look, you'll have in your packet there a piece of paper that looks like this. So I apologize for the small font, but it's the list we started looking at in December. And the front side there that says Clark County Noxious Weed List, those are the Class A's, which are required for eradication by the state. The Class B designates that are also listed by the state. So if they're designated by the state as a Class B, that means they're also designated on the county level. That's not an option. And then you also have on there the Class C's that we have as a board chosen to regulate in the past through past decisions. And then on the back side, you have the Class B's and Class C's, which are not currently regulated in Clark County because the board has chosen not to emphasize them. So there's a couple of things. The first, if you want to just continue looking at the back page, the species that I highlighted in green there were just suggestions on my part of species that would be good to go ahead and bump up as Class B designates. The reasoning for that is that all of them, except for the very last one, yellow flag iris, all of them are not currently in the county, but are close in terms of being in surrounding counties. And we know that if we get after them in a timely manner, we can keep them under control. So that was the reason for that. The one exception being Buffalo Burr, which has been in the county two or three times over the last decade, and we've been able to find it and control it and get rid of it, as far as we know. So that's the exception. And then yellow flag iris would be, you know, something that you would need to kind of think about more. It's present in the county. It's not, I wouldn't call it common, but there's enough of it that it's definitely not early detection rapid response anymore, but it's something that can cause some pretty serious havoc in that emergent wetland type of a setting. So those are the ones that I would recommend looking up to being Class B designates. If you go back to the front side of the page there, the ones that I have highlighted in orange are ones that at this meeting here, we would not be able to necessarily undesignate, but they would be ones where if we decided that these were something that were basically beyond our ability to control, and it would be not something that we would ask the public to control, then it would be a matter of us sending a petition to the state to ask them to essentially take it off the designated list in our county, which can happen, in which case it would just be a Class B non-designate. So those are a couple of things to look at. And then the last thing, just a matter of clarification, is that the Class C and the Class B that we choose not to designate, those essentially aren't on the county lead list. So to avoid confusion, any of these on this back page that you would see as Class C non-regulated, we would simply not list them. So I think there's some advantage to that, which is that when we're at the county fair or we have questions from people and they look at these Class C weeds, and let's say common teasel or common cat's ear or common groundsel, some of these that are very common that we as a field inspection program would never try to get people to control in a regulatory manner. We would provide education and outreach and certainly tips on herbicide and things like that. It would, you know, it's part of the education program, but not something that we would ever actually, you know, have an enforcement on. The idea is that on a county weed list, you simply just drop it all together from your pamphlet. You're not even advertising that that's a weed that we're concerned about anymore. It stays on the state weed list, and like I said, we can certainly talk to people about it. But that's just a point of clarification that I don't think we've really done in the past. But it says right in the RCWs that if it's not on the county weed list, it's not on the county weed list, right? It is what it is. So anyway, those are some things to talk about while you guys are, or to think about while you guys are looking to adopt the county list.
Are these all considered noxious?
They are, yeah. All of these plants are on the state noxious weed list. So the Class A's are required eradication. You have to completely not only just get rid of the seed or the part of the plant that can spread, but you have to get rid of the entire plant. So that's Class A's. Class B's designates are required control, which simply means you have to get rid of the seed and the ability for the plant to spread off your property. So if you have, let's say, Class B, let's say you have any of these really, let's say you have meadow knapweed in your 10 acres, and trust me, you probably do. So let's say you have meadow knapweed. The requirement for control isn't that that plant dies, it's that that plant doesn't spread off your property. So that's the definition of control in that case. And then the Class C's are plants that have been listed at various times, either on a watch list or maybe at one time they were A's and B's and now they've been moved down. The Class C's is kind of more of a general category for noxious weeds that we'd still like the public to be aware of, but they're not required control unless you as a county weed board choose to make them required control.
To make this list, are they considered, they have to be weeds or can they be a tree?
They can be a noxious weed tree. Yes, there aren't many on the list, but that is possible, yeah.
The one I'm thinking of is holly.
Holly is one. Yeah. So English holly was discussed at the state level, I want to say 3 years ago approximately, and there was a lot of push to try to get English holly on the list. And kind of at the last minute, there was a push from the other side, which was the actual holly growers industry that, you know, probably mostly revolves around Christmas time, ornamental type of things. And they were successful in their pushback, and so it didn't become regulated. It didn't become listed.
So in our part of the county, you see a lot of it.
Oh, yeah. It's really bad in the understory, yeah. It doesn't require much light at all. So the process for formally adopting the state list to the county list is that the weeds that you would like to alter from their current standing, but so for example, C's or B non-regulated, you want to be regulated. So that's the main part of it, and then the other part is just going ahead and finalizing and making sure that that you've officially termed it the county rules. So it's open for discussion. We can talk about the weeds that I was pointing out, or you guys could talk about any of the other weeds that you think you would like to make sure that have an emphasis.
One question I had on, do we not have any Medusa head anywhere close as far as...
Yeah, not that I'm aware of, although there's been a little bit more of a push towards it. It wouldn't surprise me if it's coming through the gorge. I know it's worse problem on the east side.
Yes.
I am not aware of it being in the county. Okay. That doesn't mean we've really been looking heavily, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But not that we've been notified of.
Okay. Yeah, I would just say then, probably don't need to bump it up, but just keep an eye out for it, because it is spreading like wildfire on the eastern side. So when the spread is coming in, any livestock or any hay or anything like that, so it would be something to worth taking a look at. And then as far as all of these that you kind of highlighted, I guess y'all feel comfortable in taking on the extra workload of that many more weeds to have to try to control and fight with.
Yeah, that's a concern I would have. That's a good point, and that is in fact one of the reasons for the orange highlighted ones on the other side is that we don't have time.
Okay.
But in the terms of the green highlighted ones on the C side, on the opposite side, the Class C listed ones there, aside from the buffalo bird, which like I said has been here once or twice and we've got rid of it as far as we know, the only one of the green that I know of in the county is the yellow flag iris. So it wouldn't be a lot of extra workload on our part. It'd be more a matter of, hey, we're paying a little bit more attention to these weeds. We know they're close, like Medusa head. You know, we'll be more likely to be surveying for them, refreshing our mind what they look like, making sure we're getting it early. So it wouldn't necessarily be any additional work on our part in terms of enforcement, aside from yellow flag iris.
Yep. Okay. An oxeye daisy, because that's designated, I mean, it can't be in the weed-free hay, right?
But, correct, yeah. Okay. So that's a good thing to talk about, the difference between the two. So the weed-free forage program, hay, mulch, straw, there's a federal list, the North American Invasive Species Association, I believe is what it's called. They put out a federal list, and none of the plants on that federal list can be in your hay, and also none of the plants on the state list can be in your hay. So it's both. So for weed-free forage specific, then everything on here is a no-go.
Everything.
But for just the field inspection program in terms of what we want to maintain on county property and what we want private property owners, well, and state and federal and everything, to really focus on, that would be the list you guys are determining. The weed-free list is not up for negotiation. That's just set. Yeah.
Right. And you haven't, I put that sample stick over there, the wild honeysuckle, this thing laying here.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what you're doing about it, and if Randy's seen it.
Is it the Japanese honeysuckle, do you think?
Glenn just said wild honeysuckle, and it'll choke a tree.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It grows, usually there's 3 to 4 vines at the base of a tree, and they start around like a grapevine, and they follow up there, and they get a nice orange flower. Really pretty, but it will kill a tree. It'll grow where I first started finding it, is in my firs, 20, 30 footers, and seen one, that's several years ago. Then it moved to the, found it on the east side of the place, then north into the neighbors, up into Penders, and then the north side of my place in the canyon. So it moves around, I'm not sure how, but Glenn at that time had said something about it being dropped by some passerby throwing it out, and I'm isolated, so it wasn't that way. So however it got started.
Is that, if you wouldn't mind, is it okay if I go up there and wander around a little bit? I know the Japanese honeysuckle is one that we professionals are pretty concerned about.
Yeah.
Came over as an ornamental, or intentionally as an ornamental, has started spreading. Yeah. I wasn't aware that it was here in the county, but it's certainly possible.
But if maybe that's it, but I think Glenn does the just wild honeysuckle.
Okay.
And then I've seen it up in a gorge by Bonneville when I'm hiking. I've seen it around a lot. And it's not being paid attention to, but I mean, with Randy with his.
I get the same thing that goes up a tree, but the white bell looking flower, I think people call it morning glory.
Yeah, that's an issue as well. That doesn't get as woody. These stems will kind of get a little bit more woody and constricting. The other possibility on some of, I know that it's very prevalent in the county, and we've had a lot of questions about it, is it's called different things. Old man's beard is one of them, but old man's beard is a label for a lot of different flowers. So this is Clematis vitalba, so it's a Clematis species that's non-native. And it can do similar things as well. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that we could talk about later if we have time, or through emails or in a different meeting, is I know that a couple of years ago you guys were trying to put together something similar to the City of Vancouver, where it was a kind of more of a pamphlet or a educational paper about tree species. And I wouldn't mind having one about viney species as well. They don't necessarily have to be on the state and county list, but they can just be informational. Hey, here's tree species that are spreading like holly, or here's vines that are causing issues like clematis or honeysuckle. And that way, you know, we could have them at the fair or a different educational event. We do a lot of speaking events, and we could have that as well. You know, just so people are aware and get after it early, that sort of thing.
Yeah, because if you clip the vine, it kind of opens up then, and you can save the tree. But if you don't see it, it just keeps getting tighter and tighter, and it'll kill a big tree.
There are also, it hasn't happened here, but in the Midwest, there are at least 3 species of bush, non-native bush honeysuckles that are becoming a real big problem. So that family in general is starting to be more of an issue.
Yeah, I'll start seeing it before too long. I'll find some green ones that I haven't cut off yet.
Okay.
And I'll let you know, and we'll show you.
Okay.
Thanks, Sam. Well, I don't know if they're in the computer, but I sent Glenn a bunch of pictures at one time. So.
Oh, yeah.
Now, can you cut that off at the base of it and then it'll kill it, or do you have to take it off the tree?
No. Well, usually I kind of unwind it a little bit, but I cut it off. It seems to dry and unleash itself a little bit. It quits constricting. But usually there's brush. I think if you had your trees limbed up, maybe it wouldn't get there, but, you know, I get a lot of... Well, they're 30 or 50 footers now, but they, and it grows up through the brush, catches the first few limbs. And like I said, there's usually 3, maybe 4 sprouts coming from around the base. And it'll get a quarter inch diameter or better, so it'll go clear to the top. But, and it does once in a while get in the brush, but it sure seems to like firs better than brush, some of the hazel or some of the other stuff. Anyway, yeah. So something to keep an eye out there, especially the forest for good.
Yeah, let me know when you see it, so you can get it identified.
All right.
Again, on this list, in terms of the ones in orange, like, we don't need to worry about that for today. That's more a matter of us at a future time petitioning to the state to get those dropped down. So don't worry too much about the orange. So there's the ones on the backside, any of those that you might want. And then there's also the... just for clarification, to make sure we're doing what the board is asking for. There's the Class C regulated here that are in blue. So at different times, and I wasn't able to find it from past notes from the board, that the Canada thistle and bull thistle, at the last time you guys designated it, it was designated for patrol only in certain areas because of how prevalent they are in the county. And so we wanted to make sure that we've got that clarified as well. I believe the intent last time was that they were going to be designated around, particularly around ag, raspberries, things like that, where seed blowing in really damages the value of the crop. And I guess it could be similar, you know, for wheat free or forage and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I believe that was the intent last time. The reason I wanted to highlight it and talk about it is that at the point we're at now, various factors, that the size of our staffing not being what it was, and just different reasons, there's a lot more Canada thistle, especially, and bull thistle than there was in the county 10 years ago. Neither one being noxious weeds that have impact on livestock, we don't really prioritize it like we do with tansy, which the tansy has a much bigger public presence and much bigger potential damage. So we always try to go after tansy, and the public is definitely more keyed in on tansy. So that's one, as we set the county list here, that's one that we definitely want to get clarification. How much do you guys want us to spend in terms of time on Canada bull thistle? How likely is it that if we were to pay attention to those, that, the state and the federal and the municipal, governments with their land holdings would be able to do a good job so that, we're not being hypocritical with the public and that sort of thing. Those are two species that we pretty much have lost the ability to completely control, to be completely honest with you. And so that's something where we want some direction from you guys as well. It might be a matter of taking it off the regulated list, the designated list. But again, that's up to you guys.
And if it comes off a Class C or regulated list, then we don't put any training or seminar, any kind of brochure action to it at all then?
We absolutely would continue to, have train. Samples at the fair, have the pamphlets, try to get people to control it, but we wouldn't enforce the state law on if they didn't control it, essentially. Okay. That's the key.
Okay.
This list that you guys are putting together here is, what's getting enforced and what's not getting enforced. We'll do our best to provide the education.
Okay.
And even, we see somebody working in the driveway, we see they have thistle, we pop in and talk to them, that sort of thing too.
Okay. A motion to adopt this list, or some more discussion on direction with bull thistle, Canada thistle? On what you want controlled?
Yes, both. Yeah. Some clarification, if you would like.
Clarification.
If you'd like, my understanding of what it currently is that we're trying to enforce it on neighboring properties of active agricultural crops. So that when somebody who's growing their raspberries or their wheat free hay or whatever, they give us a call or point out, hey, the reason I'm having some issues is the neighbor upwind of me is not controlling their thistle. That way I would be able to say, hey, the weed board is specifically mandating this control so that it's not harming this agricultural crop. As long as we have that specified, then I've got backing to what I'm trying to get the property owner to do. So it would need to be something like that.
Something in the motion to that effect? Is that what you're...
We would need to state that here, get it down in the notes and formalize that is what we're doing. Yeah.
So do you need to send that out to us in an email in the form that you'd like it to be done in, and then we adopt it at the next meeting, or...?
No, the list needs to be formalized this today, and it can be a matter of us stating it for the record on the recording, and then us writing it down, and then that's sufficient. Okay. And I would, Jerry, I would also agree with Kent on the Medusa head, adding that to the list of That was the intent of the green highlighted ones, is to put those on the regular list. And if that's potential, which it is, I overlooked that one. I would definitely put that one on the list as well.
Which one was that, Keith?
Medusa. One of the classes that I did not highlight in green.
That's on the next page. Over. So then the back side of this page.
Oh, on the other page.
Yes, sir.
That's probably, I'll speak for the board a little bit, but I imagine our intent is still the same as far as bull thistle and Canada thistle.
Okay.
Threatening the local agriculture in the natural areas. I know in my case, I'm my own worst enemy coming out of the timber into the weed-free hay. But anyway, as far as that, and then the rest of it, maybe you can actually state the motion that you need better than one of us can put it together, if that's the intent of the board, is mm-hmm. to agriculturally control both thistle and Canada thistle.
Okay.
Medusa head. So I'm sure that's the intent.
Okay. Yeah. I agree. I think that's something that's pretty important for our producers in the county.
Yeah. Okay. And then so
would that be adjacent property owned? Definitely adjacent property owned to agricultural production.
Right. Especially the berry crops.
For berry crops. Blackberries, raspberries. Yeah. Those
strawberries, row crops.
Strawberries, they don't seem to affect, or they don't come on at the same time, because strawberries are over with early in the spring. Raspberries are later, and you get the fuzz flying, and then it ends up in the...
And I don't think in this we don't have to specify any specific crops. We could just say for agriculture production.
Right. Correct.
To give them the ability to have a little bit more free will, case-by-case situation.
That's correct.
Okay.
Good.
You've got a neighbor complaining. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think, Randy? You don't know what to think.
Keep them on there.
Okay, keep them on.
Give them on there. Yeah.
I see the neighbor property blowing over all the time. Plus, the county property.
Okay.
They come right out of the ditches. I wrote several letters. They could never control them.
There she is, right there.
Uh-oh.
I ended up moving the fence back to the ditch just so I could control it.
Good job. All right, so...
Okay, so what I'm going to do is writing down to kind of formalize what you guys are talking about, and of course it's recorded as well, and then we'll, when you guys vote on this being the case, then we'll go ahead and get that down, and that would be the county list. So what I have so far is that Canada thistle and bull thistle would remain regulated on neighboring properties to agriculture.
Okay.
And then that leaves the Class C that are currently not designated, but that we know are encroaching on neighboring counties and that are close, that we'd like to put as the designate, so that we can jump on top of them soon. The advantage there that I didn't mention the first time is that if, say, for example, Medusa head, we did find that, coming in through the gorge down the Camas area along Highway 14 or something, coming that way, the season that we see it, let's say 2017, we can already be into a little bit more of a enforcement process as a motivation for them to control, whereas if it's not designated, it's just kind of educational, hey, please do this. So there's no real teeth there. So that's the advantage of kind of proactively putting those that are coming our way onto the designated list. So what the board would need to do is either go ahead and go with the ones that I suggested, or you can take some off or add some as well. That's completely up to you. There may be others, like Kent pointed out with the Medusa head, that are close that I wasn't aware of as well.
I don't have any additional ones unless y'all do.
Well, looks like a busy list.
Yeah, luckily most of the Class B designates on the first page that are listed by the state, luckily you know, at least 50% of those are not present in the county. So luckily, those are not ones we are currently, you know, scrambling to do something about. A lot of them are, but not most.
Okay, try and get this motion right. You don't actually need to say anything about the bull thistle and Canada thistle then, right? Because it's already being regulated under this provision?
Correct.
Okay, so we don't need to do anything on that. So just need to make a motion to move the weeds that are highlighted in green on the Class C non-regulated to bump them Class B regulated?
That's correct. Plus Medusa head.
Yep. And add Medusa head along with the highlighted ones to be identified by Casey. So I'll make that motion.
Second it. Clear enough.
Okay. Get you covered. We have a motion and a second to adopt these weeds plus Medusa head. Any other discussion?
Got a question.
Yes, sir.
What's Medusa head look like?
To be honest, my complete experience with it is just looking at the state website and trying to gather a little bit of information online. So yeah, Kent's going to have a much better description than myself.
It's a nasty little burr. It's got a little spine that will stick in cows' throats, and it's just a short little.
It's an annual grass. I believe it's annual.
Why burr?
Are you familiar with cheatgrass? The bromes.
Yeah.
So it's a grass that has what's called an awn that comes off the end of the grass flower, right? And they twist in weird angles, and they like stick in hair.
Sure, it's growing barley or something.
Yeah, yeah, they're real nasty.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay.
It's not, I mean, it looks, cows will eat it when it's real tender, but then they'll eat it the rest of the time too, and wreaks havoc. So
is that in a marshy area?
It's dry land.
It's dry. It'd be a real dry south facing slope property.
Well, we do tend to get some of those species down along Highway 14, mm-hmm. some of the more gravelly, more well drained areas. We'll sometimes get those eastern species, and they can cause some problems.
Yeah, like we've seen yellow star thistle and some of the other east side weeds. Yeah.
Blow out of and off the hay and along the highway then?
Along the highway, yeah.
Okay. Other questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same. Okay. You have your weed list. Approval of need to control notice.
Okay, so that is a notice that gets sent out once every year, as well as the notice that we do in fact have these board meetings quarterly. So the need to control notice basically states the RCW 1710 requirements that it's the landowner's duty to control noxious weeds on their property. And then it also has a list of the designated control, the weeds to control in Clark County. So now that we've formalized that list, we'll go ahead and list what all those county species are underneath the statement that says, you know, all landowners are required to control. And that's something we put out, you know, after the first weed board meeting every year to make sure that it's a public notice. So there was, hopefully, a copy that got sent on email. I don't see it here in paper. But basically, it doesn't state anything besides that. So this is the state law. As a landowner, you're required to comply with it. Here's the weeds that you're required to control, and that's the total notice. Since it has the Noxious Weed Control Board name on it, it's for you guys to agree to put out. That's something that we can definitely do via email, though. So,
okay.
Since it's not in front of us right now.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
More.
No, the only question I have is, what is the list that you're going to send out?
It will be the ones that you guys just formally adopted. Yeah, the county, what's now the county weed list. Yeah.
I wonder if anybody will read all of them.
Yeah,
probably not.
That's the biggest thing. If you've got half a dozen specific ones, then it'll kind of be an eye opener. But when you got 15 pages, I'm exaggerating, 15 pages to read, you'll read the first page and round file the rest of them. But yeah. In your mind.
Yeah. And Casey, that's something that we do as an advertisement in the paper.
Yes. Correct. It's
right. Not a legal notice, but an actual ad.
Yes, it would be. Yeah, as a legal notice, you would never be able to read it. The font would be so small. Yeah. But yeah, this will be an ad. It's still not large. Kind of a 2x4, you know, like a 6-inch by 4-inch kind of thing. But it won't be in the legal notice, which would be.
I wonder if it might be wise to bold some of them that really stick out. And maybe, I mean, I could be wrong. I'm throwing this out. I mean, where if you've got Canada thistle or tansy rag or some of those, and then have the entire list, but then they'll really catch their eye that's really common.
That makes sense. One possibility would be to, you know, right underneath the actual law that, you know, we'll put on there, would be, you know, ones that we're really interested in this year or whatever. The trick would be to make sure we don't make it look like those are the only ones we care about. So it would have to be a matter of wordsmithing really well.
But all of these are, you know, inclusive, but there are some that are really prevalent in the county. You know.
That we see what you can do on that.
Yeah.
You
know,
I like your idea. I was wondering, maybe it could be done on a rotational basis so that you do 25% or 33% this year, and then you do 33%. So then you have the whole list, but then you highlight X amount so people don't lose interest, like you're saying, and then within a 3 or 4 year span, you cover all of them.
Yeah, we could maybe have the wording something like, this group of dozen species are ones that we're seeing on the rise, or, you know, that pay particular attention to these because they're getting worse or something. Yeah, we could do something like that.
Yeah, if you want to send it to us, it's not in the email.
Okay.
So if you can send that to us, so that way we can go over it, then we can move forward with it via email.
Make some comments or whatever, because that's just going out as a public ad then.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Then following that are the three letters that you would like approved. The weed free forage and the Class A and the tansy red letter.
So you guys did get that in the email, correct?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So the intention with these is to make sure that landowners who have these issues, so these will be sent to the landowners who last year had these weeds present on their property. So just those landowners. And the...
Me again.
What's that?
Me again.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, you included. Randy maybe even.
Hey, Randy, they targeted anybody that had a new piece of property. And when I got it, cut all the blackberry down, and then they seen water hemlock.
Yeah. We don't grow blackberries along the edge, so they can't see.
Yeah, right.
Now, you only patrol the areas that beside agricultural land?
No, we try to get into as many areas as we can. We don't, because of just limits on our time.
So if we have a development downtown and there's tansies all over.
No, they still get the notice. Yeah. You know, obviously in terms of potential, you know, harm to the community and the lands and that sort of thing, a non-toxic plant in an urban setting is going to be less of an issue than something that's potentially harming agriculture or spreading into an otherwise pristine area. But we try not to, discriminate. We want everybody to know that they need to do their weed control. So these three letters, let's specifically talk about the Class A weed letter and the tansy red letter. So those were those will go out to landowners who had these weeds on their properties last year, which means they probably will again this year. And the idea is to start to clarify some issues that we had had in the past with our enforcement process. So what we used to do, and I'm kind of jumping the gun on point number 8 here, but that's okay, we can talk about it now instead of then, is that everybody would, that for which a field inspector found the weed on the property, everybody would first get a postcard. And this postcard would say, hey, you have this weed, you should control it. But what would happen is, let's say I'm getting the letter, and every year I get this postcard from the county that says I need to control it. They're going to do exactly what Lee said, which is just throw it in garbage. If there's no follow-up act. So what we're trying to do is separate out the educational postcard, what will now be just an educational postcard. So maybe Class C weeds, things that we want the landowners to know about, and that if they're being a good neighbor and a good steward of their land, they will do something about it. But that we will never touch a second time. We won't go back to them, we won't follow up. We ask them to call us for advice because we want to be able to provide that service to them. But it's not going to be part of the enforcement process. And then everybody else, their very first correspondence from us, the Class A's and the Class B designates, they're not going to get the postcard at all. Their very first correspondence from us is going to be the warning letter that says, you have this weed, here's a picture of it, here's how you control it. We are requiring that you control it. And so there's not confusion, because we want to kind of make a break from what we were doing before, because people got in the routine of getting their first correspondence from us and just going, why do they send this to me every time? They're not going to do anything about it anyway. So I wanted to be able to introduce the fact that there's a change by sending out these letters to the Tansy people and the Class A people specifically, so that they would know, hey, we're serious about this. We want to make sure you understand that this is something that's going to require control. But at the same time, in a letter format, we could also spell out that our goal is not to be the bad guy. Our goal is to make sure that the community is, noxious weeds are being controlled, and we're here to help as well. So that's the reason for the letter, to kind of get both of those languages out. Hey, there is a state law that we will follow, but there is also us as a resource. We want to be able to be helpful. So that's the purpose there. And then with the weed-free forage, the reason I want to send out a letter is because, as you guys know, Lee and some of you guys have done the weed-free program before, and by the middle of 2016, everybody was seeing the two obvious flaws that we were having. One was that the twine was becoming expensive, and the idea of having to get it shipped from Olympia every time was the main cause of that. So we've been able to eliminate that problem. Depending on how many people jump into the program, we might midsummer have to alter it a little bit. But the idea is that we're getting the twine shipped directly to us on approval from State Department of Ag, and that eliminates any of that UPS or other charges that would happen mid-season. If we get it shipped straight from the manufacturer to us, basically there is no shipping charge. So it's the cost of the twine, and that's it. So it'll be stored here on this facility right behind our building, which is a few hundred yards from here. And that, I wanted people to know that, because there was some frustration. I know we had a couple of long-time weed-free growers last year that says, hey, I'm not doing this anymore. So I want that letter out there so they know, hey, we're fixing the problems. So that was the first part. And then the second part was escaping me right now. What was the second part that I did? Oh, that I wanted to make sure that everybody is feeling like they're being, the inspection is happening the same for everybody. So I wanted to make sure that they knew that, you know, everybody needs to have the certain requirements checked off in order to get certification. So a couple of those requirements haven't been evenly inspected, and those are, it's that it's not just the field, it's also the ditches, fence line, etc. around what you're cutting. That's the first part. And the second part is, it's not just the field inspected, it's also the storage location. So whatever that is, barn, extra trailer from a semi-truck, or whatever that happens to be. And so if we can, you know, get that word out there so that people know that, hey, we're going to be inspecting both of those things, and that way they're not surprised once they go to put up their hay. And, oh, wait, I didn't know about that. And the reason for that is that, obviously, for the producer here, one of the advantages, aside from just being a good steward of their land, is that you're able to get a little bit of a bump in the value of their bales, and you know, sell it for a little bit more. That's the main reason from the grower's perspective. But the reason for the existence of the program to begin with is this idea that they're trying to get these weed-free products to a certain location for a reason. And so we want to make sure we're holding that standard. And if we can make sure that all the growers in the county are holding that standard, we're going to start being known more and more as a good place to get these products. Because whether it be a contractor that needed weed-free straw for their bare ground on their road project, you know, Tappany or whoever it happens to be, or if it's somebody that's buying a bunch of hay because they're part of a backcountry horseman's association or whatever, if everybody realizes, hey, this stuff coming out of Clark County, being inspected by Clark County field inspectors is always good stuff, then there's value for the grower as well, because you're going to get repeat business, and it's going to be, you know, up to you, up to the growers, of course, but there's the potential for that to be a little bit of a bump in price for you guys as well. So that's the reason for that letter. We just wanted to make sure that if there were some growers that were kind of hedging on whether or not they thought it was worthwhile to be in the program anymore, and of course it's voluntary, at least they would know that we've made those corrections and we're trying to make it as user-friendly an experience as it can be.
Did you ever have any complaints?
Mostly it was about the twine. Hey, you
know, with what?
Yeah. Mostly it was about the twine. The growers are just getting...
No. About the quality of the forage. With the past inspections is what I was, where I was coming from with that.
I have not personally, but I have talked to some growers who were not pleased with the quality of other growers who were also getting certified. And so the complaints were kind of more in-house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay.
So the main thing for you guys is,
some people are nitpicking me.
Yeah.
All the time. I'm not getting treated fairly like the other guy just because I got bit from the program because mine wasn't, clean.
I think the other one was.
I was going to point the finger at the other guy.
Yeah. So the main thing for you guys had a chance to look at it, and that we haven't sent the letters out yet. We wanted to do it maybe by end of this week or so, maybe next week if you wanted some more time to look at it. But just if you have any suggestions on the wording or anything you want me to add to it, then just let me know.
The only question I had on this one, it jumps, so it's a $500 infraction fine or $1,000. There's nothing in between that $750 on the Class A weed letter. Jumping from...
Oh, okay, yeah. So the way the state, and that's a good point. I wanted you guys, because it's up to you, really. So the Class B designates on the first violation, the first time they just refuse to do it, is $500.
On the Class B?
Yeah.
Class.
The Class B.
Okay.
The and then it can go the second time up to $750, whereas the Class A's start at $750 and can go up to $1,000. Now, we can simplify that by simply saying it's always just going to be 500. I mean, that's up to your guys' discretion. But the 500 is the lower limit, and 1,000 is the upper limit.
But you just said that Class A is 750.
Right? Yeah, it starts at 750, but can go to 1,000.
Okay, but this says 500.
Right, and that's up.
But if it had to be at 750, so this is for the Class A weed letter, so wouldn't it need to be 750 then?
Oh, sorry, that's for the Class A. Yes, it does. You are correct.
So I guess make that adjustment in there.
Okay,
so
sounds good.
So that we're giving them correct information on that.
Sounds good. And what I'm hoping that I'm stating in the letter is what I said before, which is this is the law. And if it's an uncooperative situation, which, you know, gets to the point where, hey, we really need to do this because it's affecting the neighbor, you know, all that kind of stuff, then we'll enforce the law. But hopefully what I'm also saying in the letter is, hey, we're here to help. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping the wording is good on that. But I will definitely change that. Thanks, Ken.
Looks fine other than that.
That's good.
What is the meaning of parcel?
So the state law, believe it or not, and this is something that I doubt we would ever end up in that situation because of what I just said. We're trying to be as cooperative as we can. But what the state law actually says is that we can find them every day for every weed species on every parcel that person owns until he controls it. So you could see a situation where somebody owns, you know, 5 to 10 parcels, which are defined by their, you know, the county and their deed. Okay, this is 5-acre parcel, this is a 1-acre parcel, this is a 10-acre parcel, but I own all of them, so they're all mine. Technically, according to the state weed law, that fine can get large in a hurry. I honestly don't know if there are weed boards in the county that get that strict about it, possibly on the east side where the ag communities are, you know, a way of life for everybody rather than, you know, here where it's fewer people. I honestly don't know the answer to that. But according to the state law, the fines can get huge in a hurry.
So a parcel can vary. It's defined
by that property, you know, that property's
tax law.
Maybe a parcel,
40-acre parcel. Yeah. That's your tax law. Or 12 or 17 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So good point. So
now, Randy, how many tax lots you got?
I think 7.
Yeah. And I've got one piece that's 110 acres. It's got 18 parcels in it.
But it's not a parcel of property, it's a tax parcel.
And that's what I'll do on both letters. I'll make sure to put tax parcel.
Right.
The only question I have, I'm sorry, Jerry,
nope.
I didn't mean to talk over you. I did only hear with one ear. And the only question I have or concern I have is that if we get a lot of enforcement action out of this to that effect, I personally would rescind it if that people aren't getting help. You know, what I'm trying to say is I feel that Casey should have that burden hanging over the top of it. We need to enforce. We need to try and push the people forward. But if somebody else, Casey wasn't here, and somebody else came in and started sending $500 fines to every person, then it would get out of hand.
I agree with you completely on that. The goal here is that everybody understands the law and everybody understands that there's a consequence to not being a good landowner, but that's really not our goal as a group.
But you
last year, for example, where we're kind of, you know, I didn't get the job until May or so, and so it was kind of midstream. But we're trying to improve the program and make it so that it's running better. So using last year's example, there's only one property owner who ended up getting a civil infraction. If we wanted to, it could have been literally, I mean, dozens or even hundreds. And so it's more a matter of trying to make sure we're doing it in only situations where, hey, this is really causing a harm to the people around this property. We don't want to be people that are just finding out. We don't want to be weed cops. We want to be helping as much as possible. But it is my job to make sure that they are complying. Really the Class A's, Tansy and Poison Hemlock are really going to be the ones where it's really getting down to the nitty gritty for the most part.
And didn't you notify us?
Everybody keep picking on Poison Hemlock.
Did you notify us when you sent out that one?
Correct. Yeah. So
I think we get notified. So we at least got some oversight.
If they start sending out
50 of them, then we'd be able to step in, or we could hold a meeting and say, hey, okay, that's enough, or what are we doing?
That is correct.
And you have to have teeth. I agree. Because there's some people that walk all over you. If you can't turn around and lean their property or whatever.
Right, we've had a couple like that. But if we start putting out
dozens of the letters, then I think the program's failing anyway. So then we have to do something else. You need the teeth, but on the other hand, you know, if we're hammering them that hard, something's wrong.
Exactly.
So we need to rethink what we're doing or how we're going to educate or why this big pushback, and we're having to send dozens of letters. So
agreed.
Yeah.
So using last year, Kent just brought up using last year as an example. So with this particular property owner where we knew we were going this direction, and we're actually three or four, and then all but one ended up kind of agreeing at the very last minute that we were serious and did something about it. So the one that actually got to the point where I wrote the civil infractions is a property owner who had several tax parcels. We ended up writing, I believe, civil infractions for five of them, which got his attention, and then it kind of came to a last minute, went out and mowed it. To be completely honest, it was probably too late. Probably didn't actually do control according to the definition of control. But using that as an example, as the process was going on a couple of times, I talked to Jerry on the phone, and then when it got close, like Kent mentioned, you know, the email went out to everybody, hey, it looks like this is what we're going to do. And the intention was that we would keep doing that. So if you can imagine that process and how much time it took with me dealing with that one property owner, we really, even though this letter is going out to everybody, we really wouldn't be able to do this complete process with more than a couple dozen people anyway in a given year. We just don't have the time. Right. And this, the civil infraction process, is even faster and takes less hours on our point than the other option in the state relaw, which is the go control it and then just send him a bill. And if he doesn't pay the bill, do a lien on their property. That takes even longer. So it's, we do have limitations. And so that's why I want to put these letters out so that everybody knows that it's serious. But the reality is, with, you know, maybe two or three dozen of these is as far as we would ever get. We just don't have the manpower.
Sure. So with those couple of corrections on the letter, tax lot and price wise.
Yep, I got them both down.
Okay. We need approval, so maybe if you guys are comfortable, a motion to approve with those corrections on those three letters, or two letters, three letters.
I'll make a motion to approve it.
Okay.
With the adjustments.
Okay.
It's just Class A.
All three, so the wheat free forage, the Class A, and the Tansy letter, those three. But the one with the change is the Class A.
And it would be the Tansy Ragwort as well.
I had a question on the Tansy Ragwort letter.
Uh-huh. Oh, the tax parcel, right.
Okay, so you would need to, if we're not
find it online,
then you need to make adjustment.
Yeah. So you made the motion. We didn't have a second yet, did we? So second? Further discussion then? Or?
Second.
Okay, now we'll go ahead. Now Randy's got a question. Yeah.
Trying to find the note. Okay, I don't see a page here. It's under controlling, it's under spring.
Okay, so second page on the Tansy letter.
Second page, second bullet, and then it'd be down on the third bullet. It says very effective on Canadian thistle. Milestone is also a good herbicide for tansy. As with crossbow and weed mass, Milestone should be sprayed in late spring, not summer. Mm-hmm. Now I've had the weed control come out and I told them I was spraying Canadian thistle and die every year to come right back. Mm-hmm. And I was using weed master. They said that's not one to use because it doesn't kill the roots.
Oh, no, that's correct. So that advice you got is correct. So it's a matter of probably me rewording this bullet. So
yeah, because it sounds like you're saying this works on Canadian thistle.
Milestone does. What I was trying to say, and I will definitely reword that because that could be confusing. What I was trying to say is whether you're using a Milestone or Weedmaster or Crossbow or really anything that's effective on Tansy, it needs to be earlier in the year than a lot of people are doing it. So I'll reword that to make sure they're not, it doesn't get confused that Crossbow and Weedmaster aren't good on cannabis.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll do that.
Casey, have you thought about putting in there, please read the label, especially with the Milestone, because Milestone trees
Yeah, yes. I certainly hope they are reading the label, yeah.
Bad on trees. Right?
Yeah. You could put a disclaimer at the end and refer back to the herbicide labels for all good control methods or something. Just
good idea, because we usually try to put in the disclaimer. We do on all of our control sheets that we're not advertising for any particular brand. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, one of the ones that I use a lot of is Curtail.
Yeah. Yeah, Copyright, that's, yeah, that works really well.
Okay,
I'll add those. Thanks.
The only thing bad with Curtail, if you use that, don't you have some carryover with that? If somebody uses, if you use Curtail on your lawn, and then you turn around, my son found that.
Right.
And he turned around and sprayed his garden area with it. And all of these plants would turn around and come up that high, and they rolled over and die.
Yeah.
And he blamed it on the horse manure that he was putting there or something. But come to find out, it was a Curtail that he was eradicating everything with, and he eradicated the garden too.
Hmm.
Until it has a residual.
Correct. It now has on the label, as well as Milestone, have on the label a picture of, you know, how nutrients get cycled through, and as well as in this case chemicals get cycled through, and it has right on there that, you know, this is not for composting, or, you know, you have to make sure that if you are producing hay and other people are buying it, that you let them know, hey, you know, you got to keep your livestock off your, you know, that, you know, out of your vegetable garden or whatever. You know, they have the label set up that way now that people realize that it's a long-lasting herbicide. It's really effective.
There was one I bought, I don't think it was a Curtail, it was another one I bought from Wilbur Ellis, and they told me I couldn't sell any hay crops, to anybody for 2 years. So it had some
Milestone
residual there.
That's probably the Milestone.
It was Milestone. Yeah. Huh. It was something else. Huh. And because I got it. And it's rough on trees, too. Because I got it to spray the blackberries.
Oh. All right, well, I'll add I'll make sure the wording is changed on that bullet, and I'll also make sure to add the read the label and the not endorsing any particular project disclaimers that we normally do.
Okay. So you have those corrections. We talk about the tax slots and or tax parcels instead of just parcel.
Yep.
And the dollar valuation changes.
Yep, got it.
And with that, we have a motion and a second to adopt those three letters.
Do you need that as an amendment? Does that need to be an amendment?
I suppose we could do it that way, or he just included it
in the main motion.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
We're liberal enough or whatever. Okay. Stated in the motion for the recording there. Okay. No other discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Vote same. Quarterly meeting schedule, so that can be publicly posted in the newspaper. Somebody work up dates, because I didn't. Or just kind of push ahead.
Did that not get you in the email from Carter?
No. I don't recall seeing
that. No, we never did ever come up.
No.
There was a discussion that would be put out.
Yeah.
Okay, let's, along with agenda item 4, let's go ahead and say that agenda item 6, we'll go ahead and discuss that through email as well. Okay. That's one where we'll want to finalize those last three dates fairly soon so that we can put out the public notice.
Okay. We'll wait for your email on that one.
Okay.
Is there any suggestions?
Well, the idea was that it would be very similar to last year. So the next one would be first Monday in May, I think, and then the next one would be July, and then maybe we'd have another one until November or something. Very similar to last year. It would be quarterly. Four times, not exactly quarterly. But
that was just for Randy's information.
The one I got in May is the third Monday is what they proposed.
Yes, yes.
Website.
Well, it's on the website?
The, okay. it's really up to you guys. But the main idea is that if everybody agrees that that's the day that will work, then we can formalize.
I would rather the consistency if there was the first Monday or whatever that month it is, then I automatically know in my programming.
Okay.
The gray matter.
Yeah.
That I have that usually that Monday could have a meeting.
And right now it's June. It's
who,
the first
who,
Monday.
Who is it
June.
That we've been dealing with on the emails that sets this schedule up?
That's Carmen.
No, it was Carmen. She just got here. Well,
no, it is.
So she wasn't here. It's, but you guys.
It
you
is
guys
on the website.
Yeah.
Apparently, Tom just gave me a copy of the website. We had February 13th at 9 a.m. We have May 15th at 9 a.m., which is a Monday. We have July 10th, 9 a.m. Monday. And they're all in this vicinity, A or B.
Mm-hmm.
And then December 4th at 9 a.m.
Well, she's so that's the first Monday. Is that Mother's tour?
Is that not last year's?
No, she's got this year posted up already. But
she sent me an invitation for June 5th.
She did tell me she was still working on nailing down.
June 5th? Yeah, so that's the first Monday in June.
Okay.
So, but now
I like
that
the first
sounds
Mondays
like,
myself.
Now that sounds like May and July. So
yeah.
I think we need to
firm it up.
Because she's sending out invitations via email and that are going to my calendar. So
I know she was working with me on that May because I told her I'd be gone the first May.
Okay.
So then she came back and asked what would work for you.
Thanks, Tom.
And so that's when I sent her this. And then she must have got a hold of everybody else, I figured.
Okay. So anyway, we'll clarify those dates and email them out.
So right now, what's listed is Monday, May 15th,
correct.
Monday, July 10th,
correct.
And Monday, December 4th.
Correct.
So let's see if that worked. We don't have to answer now because obviously you guys need to check your calendars. But let's see if those work, and if not, we can adjust from there. But let's go with that as the starting point.
The July 1 would not work for me. So July would not
July
work for me.
July
10th.
Okay.
Which July?
Yes.
July 10th. July 10th. I could do the 3rd or the 17th. We could, if we bumped it to the first Monday, I could do that. But that's leading right around the 4th of July.
Yeah, it's going to be a holiday weekend or holiday something.
Yeah,
so
it's the first Monday.
A lot of people will be off.
The advantage to a July meeting is it's not only good updates for how well the field inspection program is going, but it's right before the county fair as well. So there's an advantage to having one in July. If you guys, the 3rd would be tough. So with the 17th,
that would be fine for
work
me.
For most. Obviously, you guys need to go home and check your calendars and that sort of thing, too. So, but let's, so people are going home and checking the right date. So let's say July 17th. And then, was it December 4th that they checked home? Okay. So those are the three that we need to check. May 15th, July 17th, December 4th. And I'll send out a email or make sure Carmen sends out an email with those three dates so that you guys can all respond and just kind of respond, reply to all so everybody can see, you know, what's working and what's not working.
Okay. All right, we can do that. And they were all at 9 a.m. and I think one of the buildings was B instead of A, but they'll be in this complex.
Okay.
So we're good. City of Camas, mustard control, mustard garlic, garlic mustard.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just real briefly, garlic mustard is a Class A weed that we've been working with City of Camas on. Last year it was kind of there was a little bit of a sticking point. It ended up being a little bit of a negotiation. And now it's like we hope it will be. In most cases it's turned into a good cooperative effort. We're going to have a Earth Day related volunteer event where we go out and help with a volunteer community volunteer garlic mustard hand pulling event, and we'll provide some education. And then City of Camas has agreed to work with both ourselves and some of the roads crews guys here in Public Works to team up on controlling the stuff on some of their right of ways. And it's turned into a larger kind of cooperative event for some of their other weed issues. So it's turned into a good thing. I just wanted to just really quick let you guys know that that was happening. There's not really a whole lot of, you know, discussion involved, but most of the work that will take place is with Danielle's crew with the spray program, and we'll be, like I said, more around that Earth Day volunteer hand pulling type of event and just some of the coordination. Just as an example of sometimes sticking points become good cooperative efforts. So.
Okay. Changes to the inspection program?
Okay, yeah, just a couple updates there. The Weed Tool software, which is our ArcGIS database that's been by our GIS, our in-house GIS computer guys, has been tweaked for us and made for our program, is what we enter in all of our information. So the field inspectors go out, they've got a laptop in their truck, they enter in the information, you know, Lee Wells has hemlock, for example. Yeah. And then it goes through the process, like I said, where I've already mentioned we're adjusting the educational postcard versus the enforcement warning letter. So that's going to be part of this process. And we're just improving some of the aspects. It was some reliability issues that are starting to get worked out. The last couple of years, we've lost a couple of weeks worth of inspections in the middle of the summer and had to scramble with paper and notepads for a while and that sort of thing. Some of those issues are being improved in the software, but also they're now going to, at our request, have a Excel spreadsheet backup at the end of every night when our information gets uploaded, so that if the Weed Tool software program dies, we still have a spreadsheet of everything we've done. So we're just kind of working on some of those things. And then in terms of the field inspector districts, I'm not sure if Carmen was able to get this out in email, but I'll just kind of pass these around while I'm talking. So last year we had three districts, Justin here, Kara here, and then myself in the northern area. So it would be bugging you. So that's what it looked like last year. You can see that's a lot of area to cover, especially when you're talking, you know, getting from one end of the county to the other. So that's the way it's been the last couple of years. And then I've got a couple of them here labeled 2017 with three field inspectors, and then 2017 with four. And I'll pass those around. The advantage with four is that it would be Justin at the bottom still, Kara in the middle still, and then a Northwest Staffing temporary employee, not a county employee, but a temporary employee, working most of the northern area. And then I'd be able to cover DNR, Weyerhaeuser, some of the stuff up here on the north end that's Puget Power and Light, coming down here to Ridian Morgan's place, the Ridgefield Wildlife Refuge, the state fish and game people, and then down in here to some of the city properties around Vancouver Lake and some of the county properties, and then back down over here to Steigerwald. So I, as the coordinator, would basically be doing the coordination with a lot of the governmental and nonprofit entity type stuff. And then I would be able to have time to, once some of the field inspection that's coming to the point where it might need enforcement action, I would be able to get to those other districts. That'd be the advantage of that one. And I'll pass those two around. So those are kind of the two major improvements for this year. And just if you guys had any comments on that, Kevin might be able, I think Kevin, you kind of spoke to the budget at the December meeting, but mm-hmm. maybe you just wanted to mention why that fourth person is possible.
Yeah, so it has to do with dissolving the Environmental Services Department, so that there were some savings with dissolving that department. A lot of administrative savings, actually. A director and a finance manager and an assistant, that those positions aren't needed anymore. So we were able to shift some of the expense that it's called general fund subsidy for this program, shift some of that subsidy away from those high level expensive positions to back to vegetation management. Traditionally, they had a lot more general fund subsidy in the budget prior to environmental services ever being established. So it really, it was just freeing up some funds. the county still was able to recognize quite a bit of expense savings in the general fund, but there was some left over that we were able to use for this program and just give us a little breathing room. If you guys ever want details on specific numbers of the budget, just let me know and I'll bring that to a future meeting.
Didn't we have that last time? A lot of it?
Yeah.
Two new vehicles and the whole question that, and then it had the R&R included in
Yeah.
That's the same budget we're talking about.
Yeah. Several R&R trips.
R&R repairs, Randy's repairs and maintenance.
No more donuts.
That's the Carmen issue there. We got to talk to her about that.
You can't not show up for meetings.
I could pass my water bottle.
Yeah.
Uber drivers all over the place. You can send cookies and donuts.
Come on.
Those are the two main changes.
All right. Thank you. And the inspection program update.
Yeah, so the annual report looks about like this, and I'm not done with it, although I think I've gotten to the point where I really need to start thinking about this season. So I just didn't have as much time the last month and a half as I thought I would. I'm just going to pass this around. The idea would be at the end of every year, I would be able to provide you guys with a report of what we did and then looking towards the next year. So, for example, the contents here is first page would be a message from the coordinator, and then the idea is we would be able to send this to the Board of County Counselors, in which it would also be a message from the WE board, you know, on that first page. And then I've got, you know, just an overview of the field inspection program, what we did last year, the Class A and B weeds that are currently here, along with a map of where they are. And then, you know, where we've released biocontrol agents, the weed-free program, the larger four-county cooperative weed management association that we're part of, which is our county and three counties around Portland metro area. Some of our education outreach, and then getting into the goals for 2017. And then as appendices, I have the grant reports that we've already written, so we could just stick them on. So I'll just kind of pass this around. There's way more information than you want to look at just right now. But the idea is I'll be able to condense that. It's a little thick. I'll be able to condense it a little bit because right now I've got the, like, for example, the false brome weed description, the map of where it's at, and our table of how we tell the public is the best way of doing it. So our preferred control measures. And I'm going to be able to condense those down, hopefully, to one page each. And right now, they're kind of spread out. I haven't had a chance to make it look nicer, I guess, a better way of saying it. So that's the idea. And then in future years, it wouldn't be necessary to go over the same weeds all the time because you guys have already gotten a report on that, and we could just provide an update on where the map is or whatever. So we could make it smaller as we go. Okay. But that's the idea. And then there's a definite advantage to giving an annual report to the Board of County Counselors so they know that they see what we're doing, we see what you guys are doing. And that's why we want you to be able to put whatever information you want at the front of the letter too. So that's where the information from the lead board comes from. So like I said, what I'm probably gonna do, because I don't wanna spend too much time on this, is just kind of wrap it up. I've got the information that I have in there, kind of take out some of the stuff I wasn't able to get it to you guys in email form, and then if you wanted to put a message on the front page before it goes to the county commissioners, then that would be great. And in fact, it doesn't need to go to the county counselors at all unless you guys want it to. That's the idea, is that you guys as a weed board would send it to them. In terms of the county management structure, I report to Kevin, who reports to the public works director, and it may never go farther than that. So the idea that it would go to the BOCC is completely up to you guys. So that.
Well, since they're approving us, correct? I mean, we send letters in, let's go ahead and, correct. I would say, keep it in front of them.
Okay.
You know, they control the funding, they control a lot of things, so.
So we had Mark come at the last meeting.
Yeah,
correct.
That we had, he showed up.
He's got some ag background, so.
Yeah. And so he may be able to, when it comes in, if one of the other commissioners had a question, he would be our advocate
right.
for the board.
Yeah.
yeah.
No, I think it's a good idea.
You should go ahead and go ahead.
Okay.
If they want to read it, they can, and if they don't.
Right.
I'll make sure to send out an email to you guys so you can kind of peruse through it once I get it tidied up here in the next few days.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay.
So, Jerry, I had just two quick things that I just got notes for myself that didn't make the list. If you guys, let's see, what time do we have?
Getting close.
10:20, so we haven't quite got that hour and a half mark we normally hit, but we do have a visitor, so I can wait, too.
No, I think we're good. Tom's listening, and he's learning.
Okay. I'm going to email you. You answered a question I had about milfoil a couple weeks ago and talked about a quarantine list.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And so...
I didn't make a connection to that email. Sorry about that.
So I'd like to learn more about the quarantine list and all that kind of stuff. So I will email you what I'm telling you now so we don't take time here because that just opened up a can of worms that I'd like to explore and learn more.
Okay. Sounds good.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay.
So yeah, the two items I had is one, just I want to make sure that I guess we already touched on it, is that the emails going out a week ahead of time is a good way for you guys to be able to kind of peruse the stuff. If you guys could email back Carmen, and maybe you guys did this already, just let her know that you got the email and confirm that you'll be at the meeting or not, then that's probably a good way to make sure we've got a quorum here and everybody knows what we're talking about. So that's the first thing.
Sounds good.
And then the second thing is there, Allison Halpern is our state weed board coordinator. I think they might call her the executive secretary instead of the coordinator.
Yeah, she's the secretary.
She does an excellent job, and especially during the legislative time, she'll email us updates on what's going in front of the state legislature that might have an impact on us. Mm-hmm. So I have an update that she sent us, but also a question for you guys. Would you like me to, either myself or Carmen, to forward those emails to you guys as part of the weed board so that you can go through it in detail or not? Is that something that I don't want to spam your guys' emails? But if you want that type of an update, then let me know and we can forward those to you. So that's the first part.
Well, are some of the other ones I get from other agencies I work with, they're like a one page, maybe two page at the most, just this House bill, that Senate bill.
Yeah. Okay.
This is what we're thinking. This is where it's headed. We need some help here, or we don't.
Okay.
If that's what it is,
that's what we'll try to do.
You know, I don't necessarily need a book.
Okay.
But those single page updates probably wouldn't hurt anything.
Okay. So what I'll do is I'll try to send that out to you in email, but just briefly here without taking too much time. There were half a dozen that she sent out in email. The two that looked like they would affect us the most. One is. The Senate Bill 5754, and I'll email these out to you. And the it would change RCW 1710 .170 to actually state that county weed boards can fine state land holdings if they don't do their weed control.
Cool.
So it's
state revenue.
So it's always been in the past that county, municipal, and private properties we could fine, but state and federal is more of a cooperative, hey, you have this, you really need to do something about it, but it's supposed to be more cooperative, which is of course the goal anyway. Yeah. But this was introduced by two senators, and it actually lists out RCW 1710-170, and then it just makes two addendums. And the main one is the amount of the expense constitutes a lien against the property and may be enforced by proceedings on the lien, comma, including on lands owned by the state. So the ability to actually do the work on the state land and then bill them or fine them. Mm. So that was the change there. Be curious to see what happens there.
But, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So that's, I know that oftentimes for us, we get, the way that this might impact us is oftentimes we'll get typically at the state fair the county fair or in phone call complaints, people are saying, hey, all of your county right-of-ways look like garbage. And we try as best we can to say, hey, well, these are county roads, and these are state roads, and these are city roads. We try to, but it's really hard to do. That's where it might impact us, is we could maybe put a little bit more pressure on them. But to be honest, State Department of Transportation, not everywhere, but last year they did a pretty darn good job on their Tansy. Mm-hmm. When we called, they went out, and they were hand-pulling it just like everybody else. So.
Does that affect like Richfield Wildlife then? You mentioned that in your inspection. I mean, now we can inspect them and...
Well, that was still
federal. We're still doing it, but that's federal then.
That'd be federal, yeah.
That's right.
And they own a lot of property.
Yeah.
But
5,000 acres.
Yeah. Their property now compared to what it was 5 years ago, they're doing a significantly better job. And in fact, on the Class A, when we started working hand in hand, had a cooperative effort with WashDOT on I-5 on slender flower thistle, and we found some on their property, the Richfield Refuge property as well. They started surveying and mapping it and controlling it that very year, and they've been doing it since then. So they're trying to do a better job. They got a new biologist there about 4 or 5 years ago, and new management now, and they're trying. They're always going to have a lot of teasel and things like that, but they're doing a better job. Okay. And they worked really hard on another Class A weed called... Ricefield Bulrush, and they have volunteer hand pulling events, and they did some spraying this year. We went out and visited one of their sites right after spraying, and they gave us a tour, and they're doing a pretty good job. And that's the way the federal ones will have to be, just more of a collaborative.
Okay.
The second one that I just wanted to point out real quick is one that may not affect us as much as it would people who do a lot of orchard, you know, kind of that Yakima area or the Wenatchee area, that sort of thing, more of the east side, is that bill has been introduced, this time not in the Senate but in the House, House Bill 1564, by about a dozen or so representatives. And they want it to be mandatory that before any spraying happens on agricultural property, that would include airplanes, tractors, anything that's mechanized. I don't know if they're talking about backpack spraying, but you know, ATVs, anything like that, that would put out a large volume of spray, that all of the surrounding property owners be notified in writing a week before it happens. Mm. And the reason they're putting it out is that they claim in the first paragraph, and this is definitely debatable as far as I'm concerned, but they say that, they talk about acute and chronic health problems, and they say that further, the legislature finds that drift from pesticide spray applications is a constant source of pesticide exposure and poses significant risk to people in the vicinity of the pesticide application, and that they go on to say that lack of communication is the main cause of that exposure. So that, like I said, there may be a few ag areas here in the county where that could be a problem. Some of the raspberry and strawberry fields get a fair amount of herbicide, but it could even affect, you know, weed-free forage or that sort of thing too. Yeah. So that's something that could affect us. In both cases, if you go to, and when I forward you the email, you can there's a link there, so it makes it easier. You can go to the state website that allows you to make comments and that sort of thing. Both of these have gone from the initial reading to what's called the committee phase, and it sounds like from what Allison said, they have until the end of this week for comments and stuff. So that's something that you guys could provide comments. I think as a weed board, that's appropriate.
What was the bill 5754 on, the Senate bill?
Yeah, so it's Senate bill 5754, yep. And
what did it pertain to? What was
that? Was the one where that we could actually charge the state for controlling their weeds, or I don't think it says we can fine them. I think it just charged the state for controlling their weeds. And then House Bill 1564 was the one about.
I'm in the link.
You said state and federal.
Just state.
Okay. Just state.
Yeah, federal would still be just a cooperative working together type of thing.
I'm in Olympia with AWC Wednesday and Thursday, and we'll be meeting a lot of the representatives and senators and that on different issues. But so a person, some of them like Ed Orcutt or whatever, that way you can throw some of that in. He's not even part of our district, but he'll know well, so that will be something a person could mention to him. I have one thing I'm going to mention before we And I don't know whether you remember two meetings ago or three meetings ago, you were talking about a shiny germanium. And Paul Snowy told you that there was a place that had some.
I got his emails, yeah.
Huh?
I got his emails.
You got an email. Well, the guy was very unhappy that Paul Snowy was sharing. But he wanted to control it, but he didn't figure. I mean, he brought it to me to bring to the weed board.
Okay.
But Paul Snowy had gotten a hold of you, and that was the rub with him.
Okay.
He wanted to be the messenger, not have somebody else tattling him. But he did say that he put on 80 gallons of spray yesterday, and he is using a sprayer on an ATV, 15 gallons at a time, and he would probably finish everything up today, and it was over a 5-acre patch in a wooded area. Huh. So,
yeah, that's a good update. Thanks. Paul is, I mean, if you were to have a weed warrior program, that he would be the definition of the weed warrior. And so he gets, you know, he really wants things to be right. And so he sometimes maybe gets a little ahead of the game. But he did show me the photos, and that was an impressive amount of shiny geranium. That was a carpet. And there was almost nothing in the forest understory besides shiny geranium. So yeah, ATV would be perfect.
Because he can get in through the trees and that. Because I even asked him, because I've got a 15-foot boom sprayer on a 25-gallon tank. But, and that was his comment this morning. I seen him call me this morning at 6. It's trying to negotiate around the trees and that part of the ATV. And then he said, go back over it later on and see where I missed.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got a pretty good handle on what he needs to do, but just let him know if you see him again. We're here to help, and if he wants us to come out and give some suggestions, or he may be doing it perfectly already.
He was using crossbow. Yeah. That's what he was using.
That'll work.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? Okay. Well, we'll adjourn the meeting.
I did have one question. That... where did that big heavy thing, Casey, that you were there? There we go. I would like to have a copy of that. I don't have time to look at it now, but there was a lot of useful information in there. If you were talking about refining it some or something.
Yeah. So what I'll do this week is I'm basically not going to add more to it because I need to move on to other things. But I'll kind of condense it a little bit and be able to remove some pages, and then I'll send it out in an email to you guys so that...
I don't want a hard copy.
Oh, yeah, that's no problem as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not a good email person.
I can do both.
My wife gets the emails, and then she's got to print them out. So.
Oh, okay. Especially...
If it comes addressed to me, I'll put it in my file. Not the ROM file.
As you mentioned, at least a couple of you did, that you thought it was a good idea to send it to the BOCC. And if you do, then you might want to think about if there's anything you wanted to add to the front of it in terms of language, so that when I send this out an email, you guys can add to it. So. But I will definitely get you a hard copy as well.
Thank you.
I'll that'd probably be good timing to bring the hard copy to you when I check on your poison memo.
So. Okay. Yeah. Right out next to the freeway.
That was good. Yeah. It was, for the record, that was Kara, not me.
Yes. All right. As a matter of fact, I had a postcard the other day. I was cleaning some stuff up in my office. And I found the little card, and I was laughing.
So, take it.
It was a pre-existing condition.
I'll be adjourned.
I'll be back again this year.